Hey everyone, welcome to Be Love, Do Good. I'm your host, Christy Hayes, a wife, mama of two, founder of Be Strong Story, and the author of The Lunchbox Note, a true story about how a simple lunchbox note changed my family's life and mission forever. If you're looking to break out of your comfort zone and love others in a way that brings about real change in your community, we've got you covered. The Be Love, Do Good podcast brings you inspiring stories and authentic conversations that empower you to be love and do good wherever you are. Stepping out of your comfort zones can be hard, but if we do it together, we'll see others, love others, and quite possibly change the world. Well, thank you so much for being on. I'm so excited to dig into your new book, Raising Mentally Strong Kids, and you wrote it with Dr. Daniel G. Amen. I want to just dig into the nitty gritty of this book. Did I say his name right? Did I say his name?
It's Amen.
Amen. Okay.
Amen.
Thank you.
Yeah, Daniel
I always asked before and I didn't because I was like, oh, I didn't get it. So Raising Mentally Strong Kids. And then you talk about how to combine the power of neuroscience with love and logic, because we all know that you are the president of Love and Logic. Many of us who are listening today have worked with that, are still doing that with our kids. It's been such a blessing to us as a family. I just want to tell you. And so I want to get into the nitty gritty. I have so many questions to ask you. But first, I want to hear just a little bit about your story when you were a kid. And I thought it was so fascinating when I read the foreword of your book of how your dad, you know, kind of said he was this helicopter drill sergeant parent. And then he made like a 360 change, and you were kind of the product of him learning about psychology and the mind and all that. So tell me a little bit about growing up in your family and why that was so important.
Well, my dad was originally, he played in the band at Ringling Brothers Circus. He traveled all around and he was a professional musician. And then my mom said, Jim, you know, you need to be home. Okay, so enough with this. And so he went and he begged some schools to hire him, and somebody finally said, okay, we'll give you a shot. And he became an educator and really fell in love with working with kids. And then he got really concerned about a lot of the kids who seemed to have a combination of respect and responsibility deficit disorder. Mm-hmm. That's a made-up thing. It's not a real thing, but we know what it looks like, though.
All of our kids have that a little bit.
Disrespectful, irresponsible, and then the rise of the helicopter parent. I mean, and he's thinking, oh, these other people, you know, they're really struggling with their kids. But wait a second. My house is a mess. I better get things straight at home. So, you know, he was desperate at home. He was desperate in his job as an educator. And he ran into a wonderful man named Dr. Foster Klein, who's a psychiatrist. And they through lots of prayer, lots of struggle, lots of desperation and experimentation came up with what the world now knows of as love and logic. And so I was raised in that atmosphere. I think that's why I became a psychologist, just to figure out what happened to me when I was a child. But, you know, a real blessing, because my dad and I are still very close. And, you know, my mom, she passed on some years ago, but we had very sweet time as she got older together. So that's the goal. I mean, the goal is long-term loving relationships. But if I were to say to the listeners, the overarching goal for raising kids ought to be simple. And I think of it as twofold: strong and loving kids. Mm-hmm. How do we raise kids who are strong, who are also loving? And the two go hand in hand. I mean, you know, if you want to see somebody who struggles with being able to love other people and do good, right? It's somebody who feels weak inside, who's scared. Because there's nothing that brings out nasty behavior more than fear. Mm-hmm. So when we can raise somebody who's strong, that can handle life's challenges, we want kids that are strong, then they're going to be a whole lot more likely to be able to love other people, especially love other people who are hard to, you know, at the time to love. That's the big picture.
I didn't tell you this at the beginning, and I usually tell people at the beginning just kind of our story. My kiddo's 15 now, and when he was in first grade, he was being bullied on the playground a little bit, and my husband wrote him a lunchbox note, and it said, be strong, protect the weak, love everyone. It has become the mission and motto of our family for the last however many years. This is what started the podcast. It's what started our children's book. That is this mission. It's we had an apparel line that had that phrase, but it was the same thing that you're talking about, is how do we help our kids be strong in who they are? Because the world's going to tell them lots of different things about who they are. And then how do we help them, even in that adversity, be able to love everyone? So thank you for saying that. I love that we're kind of on the same page already.
Well, my goodness, we're in the same book. We really are.
Okay. I love it. Tell me a little bit, when we're talking about goals, one of the things in your book and one of the things I did last night, as I have an advanced copy of the book, so I got to do it, is these parenting goals. And I love goals. That's my personality. I'm driven. Yeah. I love goals. Not everyone loves goals, but it helps me know where I want to get to, or am I doing the things to get to my vision or my goal. So talk to me a little bit about why it's so important to have parenting goals.
Well, parenting goal, first of all, we need to know the destination. I mean, really, you know, when I go someplace in the car, I punch in the location, it's got to be pretty specific, otherwise I'm going to end up in the wrong place. That's the kind of the duh, you know, reason for why we want to have goals. But the beauty of goals is it also orients the mind to be able to actually see the end result. Okay. And being able to see it, actually visualize what it looks like, what it feels like, is so incredibly crucial to being able to help us get where we need to go. And we often, you know, smart people have all sorts of wonderful business and educational, financial goals, and then they get so tired out developing those, they get home, they forget about the fact that.
Yes.
You know, a house is falling down. Again, it's such a common thing. You know, the cobbler's kids, their shoes are falling apart, right? And so we want to sit down and ask ourselves, where do we see ourselves going? Where do we want to see ourselves going as parents? And let's remember, and let's come in close here. Okay, friends. Well, let me ask you. Is the world really changed by me spouting off a bunch of opinions about what I think and what I think other people should do? It's a fun exercise. Old guys do it in front of coffee and pancakes, you know, down at the.
But, my 85-year-old dad does that every single day with his group of friends, right?
It's fun. It feels very therapeutic. But in the final analysis, the world has changed. Our families are changed through our example. Mm. And so the first step in creating strong and loving kids is for us to get strong and loving, get solid on that. And the goals, let's be clear, the goals are mostly about our behavior. So it's not so much the kids. The kids are the side effect. Okay. The primary focus is on and taking the humongous timber out of our own eyes and working on that. And by the way, you know, it's like there's this idea that once I get that out of my eye, I'll be able to tell other people how to handle their lives. And the reality of it is we never do. You know, it's just too immense of a task. Sure. And so life is more about us focusing on what we're doing, how we're living our lives, our thought life. And the beautiful side effect is it ups the odds that other people will join along.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit how you've done this in your own life. Talk to me a little bit about how you've kind of done that work in yourself so that you can be that model for your kids. And what are some of the things that you feel like are so important to model?
Well, one of the most important things to model is a dependency on Christ, a dependency on God, because we're going to blow it. You know? And if we go into this thinking, okay, I'm going to have some goals and I'm going to be this perfect parent and they're going to work out really great, you know, we're going to blow it, and we're going to be on a very precarious perch, so to speak. And so what we want to be very clear about is that we are going to make mistakes. In fact, I spend so much time, now, I want you to hear this, listeners. I spend so much time trying to be perfect in my life, trying to be in control of all these things that I was failing miserably. And I was in the process of raising kids who are going to be exactly like me, which is scary. You know, thinking that perfection, that somehow under my own power, I could achieve this result. And see, one of the most important things, and I hope this is an encouragement to you, is that it's good when you make mistakes. In fact, you know, when you asked me about my journey, you know, I could lie to you and give you a polished up version. But my journey's been full of fits and starts and struggles. And the realization that it's not so much perfection, but it's kids seeing you humbly growing each and every day. I want to tell you about my mom. She'd gotten sick in her older years, and she wasn't going to be around for much longer. And I had some really sweet times with her, and we were talking. She said, "Oh, Charlie, I made so many mistakes." And I said, "Yeah, you know, we had that kind of relationship. Yeah, Mom, you did, you know." And we laughed together. But I said, "You know, the thing about it is that we got to see you grow up." Mm. You know, me and my sisters, your kids got to see you grow up and mature. And now we have a picture of what that looks like.
I think that's the thing that I interview a lot of people, and we talk about what, you know, our kids need to do and what are the five steps of, you know, before I was a parent, I was a great parent, right? I was a youth pastor, and I was so good at telling those parents how to parent their kids. And then I became a parent, and I was like, oh man, all the things that I said I wouldn't do or would do, you know, has just gone completely out the window. And so I always hear it's us, that we need to work on us and be that model right to our kiddos. And I think it's interesting, this, you know, your book is Raising Mentally Strong Kids. And if I read that just and didn't know anything about you, I would think, okay, we're going to be talking about like mental strength. How do I get my kids to persevere? How do, you know, maybe that might be the thought. But one thing that I love about this book and what I love about Love and Logic is you dive into empathy, loving relationships. And so I want you just to kind of talk a little bit about that. Like, how do we raise mentally strong kids? But you are so big into empathy. There's a quote in your book that says, "Empathy opens a child's heart and mind to learning, whereas anger shuts the door on learning and relationship." And many times, I just want to be vulnerable here, is I have a kiddo who needs a gentle parent. She's driven. She's my mini-me. But I can come at her hot because I'm not the most gentle person. And so she needs the gentle in me. So talk to me and talk to others just a little bit about how do we raise mentally strong kids, but through an empathetic lens.
Well, how about if I tell you a story?
Yes.
A story is about Roger. And Roger was a kid who'd had some struggles. He was a foster kid, and he knew how to control situations. You make sure that people don't love you. So you act out a lot and you push back, and then people give up on you, and you don't have to get close, and therefore you don't have to think as much. You don't have to feel as much. You know, you can just kind of control things. And Roger found out that how you train foster parents was that you get really bad report cards, and then they freak out about the report card and throw some lectures your way. And then you'd say, "I don't care." And then they get madder, and then their veins start to bulge on their forehead. And then you say, look at that. They're about ready to self-destruct, and the focus is off of you. And you know, you don't have all this messiness called love and accountability and commitment in your life, right? So he developed that pattern because he didn't know any better. So he goes on to a new foster mom because he was burning through them pretty quick. And here's a new foster mom. And she was a farm mom. She didn't have any advanced training in psychology, but she had a lot of love and wisdom in her heart. And so he produces this horrible report card. And she looks at it and she says, "Oh, Roger." And he said, "So?" And she said, "Oh, Roger, I can't imagine how disappointing this must be for you." And he says, "Well, I don't care." And she says, "Oh, well, the good news is that I'm going to love you regardless of the number of years it takes you to get through the fourth grade. I'm just going to love you." Sweet. And, you know, she handed the report card back, and she was sharing this story with us because it's so similar to Love and Lies. She said, "I did that on accident. You know, I just knew anger wouldn't work." And, well, he stomps off, and now he's really upset. Roger's really upset. He stomps his foot. He turns around, and he looks at her, and he said, "Well, I didn't even care about it until you said that." So here we have this woman who is just lavished love and empathy on the kid. And now he's more stressed out, which quite frankly is kind of a good thing. Mm-hmm. What we saw with Roger, what we've seen over the many decades we've been doing this, is that when we can love on somebody who's being difficult to love, when we can love on somebody in the midst of their poor decision making and they're experiencing consequences related to their life choices, when we can still love on them, what that does is, number one, it says, "No, yeah, you're loved, you know, you're valued unconditionally." But an equally important piece of it is that you're the one who has to live with the consequences of the decision. You can't externalize blame onto this person. Mm-hmm. Empathy really keeps the discomfort of the consequence on the child's shoulders so they can learn from it. And now here's the hard part about parenting. One of the hard parts, okay? We don't want our kids to experience struggle. We don't want our kids to experience trials. Even if they've created them, it's so easy to be that helicopter parent. That helicopter parent that swoops in, rescues, hovers, makes everything okay. And I want to really call that style out. I mean, it's easy to joke about it, but the research on helicopter parenting is very clear. Helicopter rescuing parents who try to make their kids happy all the time raise chronically depressed and anxious kids. Very strong correlation between that helicopter style, the permissive style, and kids growing up suffering sometimes with lifelong depression, low self-esteem, anxiety about life. And so, can I ask a question here?
Sure.
It's a deep one. What is love? What is love? I'm still trying to figure that out, but it's interesting. As I get older, I start coming up with some, well, it's being revealed to me. You know, God is revealing some things to me. And does he love us enough to allow us to struggle?
I hope so.
Yeah. Loves us so much. He wants us to grow. You know, he loves us right where we are, but, you know, he's committed to our growth. And does he allow us to make some mistakes?
Yeah.
Because without free will, can there be love?
Right.
Do we have any sense of his grace if there isn't free will to blow it? Yeah. And see, we know, I mean, as Christians, we know, you know, we ought to consider it pure joy when we face trials. That sounds so good. We read that chapter in James, the book of James, and we say, "Amen." You know?
When you're not going through a trial, right?
Exactly. I like to.
it hits a little different when you're going through something.
I know. It is so hard. And when your kids are going through it, you know, a big piece of this book is stand beside them as they go through struggles. Guide them just the right amount, but not too much. It's like you're the master baker. and you mixed up this cake, and now it's in a pan, and you put it in the oven, and you know that you can't trust the cookbook or the thing on the box about how long it needs to be in there. You have to keep an eye on it, and that's parenting.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to keep an eye on it, and our kids are in the heat. They're in the oven.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so tempting to pull them out too quick, right? And then they don't firm up, right? Yeah. You've got a soggy cake. You don't want that. But we also don't want to leave them in there too long. So there are times where we should rescue. There are times when we need to jump in and make things right.
Yeah. Yeah. Why do you think it is, like, I want to go back to what you said, the percentages of kiddos who don't face struggle when they're in the home and they're rescued. Why is it that when they get out of the home that they're experiencing anxiety, depression, all of those different things?
Well, how do you know you can handle difficulties if you haven't had them? I mean, somebody once asked me on a podcast somewhere, hey, how do you help kids deal with adversities and struggles? And my response was, you don't take those away.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so go with me to some scenarios. So let's say we have a kiddo who is having friend problems, and you have a friend who maybe has said something mean to them. They're sad, they're crying. How do we help them deal with that on their own instead of swooping in and calling the mom and making sure the kid's being nice and, you know, all those things? How can we help our kids solve those problems so we don't have to solve it for them?
Well, let's put some artificial steps on it. Well, you know, parenting isn't a step-by-step process, but we'll put some artificial steps on it. It'll facilitate our discussion a little bit. So step one, empathy and listening. And I can't even imagine how hard it must be to have somebody you care about treat you that way and say those things to you. What's that like for you? You know, what does that leave you thinking and feeling? Yeah, I just love you. And this is best to, you know, depending on the kid, maybe you got their, you're hugging them and you're loving on them. And it's just like my job right here is to be present, not to problem solve.
Yeah.
You know, that's what people need in those situations. They need somebody to be present, not to problem solve. Now, our anxiety, our own anxiety will trick us into feeling like we need to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be careful about that, right?
Yeah.
So I'm taking a deep breath and I'm calming myself, which is going to be more calming to the kid, right? So, and sometimes we just do this and there's no resolution and, you know, or progress on it for a day or two or whatever. You know, we don't have to rush these things.
Yeah.
Okay. So then the step two is we send the power message, and the power message is sent by asking the child, what do you think you're going to do? So in other words, you're strong, which is the opposite of what a helicopter sends. A helicopter says, oh, you're weak. Through their actions, you're weak. That's why I'm rescuing. So what are you going to do? You know, the kid's like, I don't know. I'm just going to slap her the next time she does that. You know, don't be shocked if you hear things like that. And also lean into it. Oh, so you think you'd slap her? That's an option. By the way, it is an option. Now, I'm not saying it's a good option, right?
Sure.
But that's an option. And how would that work for you? Would I get in trouble? Or they might say, it would feel really good. I'm like, yeah, in the short term, right? So step three is we ask permission to share ideas. I like to do this with adults too. I try not to give advice unless somebody really expresses a desire for it. So would you like to hear what some people decide to do? That's step three. Some people. Don't say you should. Would you like to hear what some people decide to do? What? Well, step four, you give them a menu of options, just possible options. They don't have to be great ones. In fact, the first one should be a lousy one. Kids tend to reject the first thing you say, so don't waste a good one, right? So, oh, honey, I guess some people decide not to do anything about it. You know, and they just, how would that? Well, then I'm mad. You know, that's a bad idea. Yeah. I guess other people decide to say to themselves, usually when people are acting that way, it means they're really hurting inside. I wonder what my friend is hurting about so much. That's kind of weird, Dad. Well, I know it feels weird, but what's weird about is when we start to look at inside people's hearts, we don't take things so personally. It's like we can say to themselves, yeah, they're hurting, and that's why they're doing it. It's not a personal insult. Mm-hmm. They're acting like a jerk, but they're not a jerk. They're hurting.
Yeah.
See, some people find that that helps, because then even if their friend doesn't change the way they act, they still are not so upset by it.
Yeah. Right?
Okay. And I guess some people just decide. They say, well, you know, I can say to my friend, I like to hang out with people who are treating me nicely, and we'll try again some other time. And they give their friend a break.
Yeah.
Now, here's where step five comes along. It's the hard one, friends. It is allowing the kid to solve the problem in their style.
Mm.
What if it's not the right style? What if it's that this is where I crumble, is I kind of do those steps or try. But then when they're like, this is how I'm going to handle it, I'm like, oh, abort. No, don't do that.
Now, okay. So step five, I'll answer your question. It's such a great question, by the way. You say to the kid, you know, if any kid can figure this out, you can. So please let me know if you'd like some more ideas or whatever. And you leave the door open. But let's say the kid says, well, I'm going to do such and such. Unless it's going to cause major damage to life, limb, and spirit, you know, you just did it. You take a deep breath. You take a deep breath,
yeah.
And you let it happen. And you say to yourself, well, you know, I bet the father in that parable, when the kid said, give me my allowance so I can go off and do my own thing, you suppose it's easy for the father to let the kid go and make that poor decision, even though the father knew?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so, I think that's where we all, I would say, of all the parenting, whether it be young or old, that is the one that I feel like we get the most tripped up in. And I would feel like in my parenting style, I'd probably help my kids be a little more, I kind of help them do all the things. So they're doing their own laundry, they're making their own decisions. I'm not sweeping in and helping figure out the stuff. However, through counseling, I'm learning I do have a little bit of control issue, even as much as I want to give them independence.
Oh, you too, huh? Me too. Yeah, I got that.
It's that last step that just, you know, is like, well, wait, that's not going to be the right step that I would do. And so I think that's the one where we can just hold our breath and wish for the best, but they'll figure it out. And they always figure it out. It always is figured out. And they always do it.
Let's think about the prodigal. You know, the father did not go and rescue.
Yeah.
And the kid comes back and he's figured it out, you know, at least a large part of it. Now, how do we have to figure out a lot of hard things in life? The hard way.
Yeah.
And then you see this image of tremendous grace. And that's, you know, his kindness is what leads to repentance. It's not getting beat over the head with all the things that we've done that have been wrong. It's like that grace and that kindness. And see, will our kids ever know the depth of our love if we haven't allowed them to blow it?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's such an interesting, you know, I could go on days. I love talking about this. It's so beautiful. Yeah. But, you know, grace is a beautiful thing. But grace is not enabling bad behavior, though.
Right. So there's a story, and I'll finish with this because I would love for you to talk about it. And then I have my own parenting moment that happened last night that I want you to dig into a little bit. So I love the story of your dad and in the book where you wanted the dirt bike and he let you have the dirt bike. Can you explain that story and then what happened when you didn't follow the rules? I love this piece because this is not normally, if something were to happen like this, I would say, here are all the different consequences and, you know, and maybe anger would come into that. And you talk a lot in your book about how anger, you know, what happens to our brain when we parent out of anger. Instead of empathy. So tell the listeners a little bit of that story. And then I want to bring in what I did last night and have you kind of critique that for me.
Well, the big idea here is my father says, yeah, you know, you can have this if you can earn it. Right. And I earned it. And then you can have it as long as I don't have to worry about safety. And I took the thing out and I rode it on the dirt road and, you know, did a number of things thinking, oh, Dad doesn't see everything. That's an important lesson in and of itself. Supervision. Don't trust them. Please don't trust your children. I mean, that's crazy talk. You know, when people say, oh, the kid says, you don't trust me. It's like, I don't even trust myself, honey. I'm glad people are watching after me. So let's just join the club. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it comes down to like, what is a fundamental belief about human nature? I mean, that's an important issue. Okay. That's a whole other discussion. So anyway, he lays out the limit. I violate it. No lectures, no threats, no discussion about it. The bike is just gone, you know, and it's very important that we use empathy, but that we also don't do a lot of nagging and lecturing and second chances, because that just creates resentment on our part, on their part, and it doesn't prepare them for a world where, quite frankly, sometimes cause and effect just kicks in the first time. Yeah, you know, sometimes it just takes one teeny tiny little decision. For all of us, even us quote unquote mature people, it takes one little bad decision and no reminders and things go off the rails. I want kids to have that perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, there's choices matter.
Yeah. I love that your dad, I think one of your things was that you needed to do the chores in order to have this bike.
Oh, yeah,
so,
yeah.
And you didn't do them. And so he just very calmly said, you're like, where's my bike? And he's like, oh, I actually had to pay someone to do your chores for you because you weren't doing them. And I just went ahead and gave him the bike as your payment. And that
That's what eventually happened was I think I experimented with something. I think, you know, there was a whole saga over not right wearing the helmet, but I remember not doing the chores. And I think my dad actually said, you know, I need you to help out and do this. And I think I actually said this, no, you can't make me. I think I even tried that. And parents, would you like one for that?
Yeah. Well, that's when you lose your mind. Yeah. Usually
that's if you can remember this, you're going to be happy. Right?
Okay.
So the kid says, I'm not doing it. You can't make me. If they ever say that, just try to grab a hold of yourself and say, oh, and that's called stalling on your part. Oh, that's stalling. Okay. It's okay to stall. Oh, yeah. Oh boy, that's not good. I'm going to have to do something about that, but not now. I make better decisions when I'm really calm. Well, what are you going to do? I don't know, but I'll just do something. I love you. Is it okay to buy yourself some time?
Yes, probably a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, when you don't know what to do, delay the consequence. You know, so many parenting experts say you have to have immediate consequences. That's a recipe for disaster. Mm-hmm. Wise people take time. They calm down. They consult, they get wise counsel, you know, and then they deal with it later. Yeah,
that's good. So here's my parenting thing. My kids are great kids. They're sweet. I don't think my son has ever talked back to me in his life. He's probably a Enneagram 9 peacemaker, all those things. But one thing that he has trouble with is doing things when he's asked the first time. So he likes to delay. He likes to sit there for a while before he actually does something that you've asked him to do. So it's been years. I mean, I feel like, and he doesn't talk back. He doesn't say, I'm never going to do it. He would never say that. He just would sit there quietly until he's asked over and over and over again to do it. So he's 15. He honestly needs to learn how to get ready for bed, go take a shower. I don't need to tell him these things. I don't need to say, hey, bud, it's time to take a shower. Hey, bud, it's time to go to bed. But it stresses me out so much when he's not doing that, that I tend to say, okay, time for shower, time for bed, make your lunches, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And then they sit there and they do nothing. So yeah, last night, I also want to say I've been sick. So I maybe had some stress in my bones. And I just said, I'm done. I said, I'm done. I'm not telling you anymore. I'm not reminding you anymore. I'm just going to start taking things away. I said, your phone, whatever. I said, I'm not doing this. So I'll give you a chance. And if you don't do it, I'll just take a phone, take whatever. So my husband's like staring at me from the other side, like, wow, you did not consult me in this at all. We did not talk about this. I was like, I'm done. I was very reactive. So last night, 24 hours after I had said this to my kid, we're watching football. It's starting to get late. I get stressed when my kids don't have a lot of sleep. That's for some reason. I think my parents said, if you don't get enough sleep, you're, you know, going to die or something. So I just always have been stressed about my kids getting a lot of sleep. And so we're sitting there watching football and I said, hey, bud, it's probably time to start wrapping up for bed. I do something in the other room. I come back. Where is he? Still watching football. So I said, hey, I was like, could you hand me your phone? And he's like, hands it to me. And he said, wait. He said, so I don't get it tomorrow on the bus on my way to the soccer game? I said, oh, you don't. I said, I'm sorry. I said, I gave you a choice. I said, you didn't do what was asked. And I said, so I'll be having your phone for tomorrow. I mean, he doesn't like get upset. He's not that kid that does that. Now, my daughter would huff and pout and all the things. But he just was like, crap. So then he goes in the room and does everything. He's doing his laundry. He's, you know, taking a shower. He's doing all the things. So can you walk me through that of like in the moment, maybe what to do different or how do I just help my kiddo? I don't need to be telling him all the time to get ready and do the things.
Wonderful. Okay. So first of all, you know, you maybe kind of felt like you blew it a little bit. Okay. I like from time to time for parents to just get really strong. I mean, you know, there is a place for a little bit of sternness or a little bit of anger expressed to the kid. And when you don't do it all the time, it really kind of wakes them up a little bit.
Yeah.
When it's your consistent way of operating, they get used to it and it has no impact on them. So, say to yourself, I'm going to give myself permission from time to time to be really real with my kids, and that's okay. That's really good for
them. I do that more often than not. Don't worry.
Okay. So anyway, we want listeners, you know, we want our people watching this to hear that because I don't want them beaten up on themselves if they do this from time to time. Okay. So how do we get kids to listen the first time? The basic idea is we say it once, which means that we have to pick the big issues that really matter. And we're going to say to ourselves, okay, this is really important. I'm letting a lot of other stuff that doesn't matter go. But for example, when it comes to, you know, the TV being off at a certain time, the phones being, and I can't tell you strongly enough, hey, they do not need to be going into their rooms with their phones or computers or other things. Those need to be left in the parents' room. Mm-hmm. And parents, you know, do your best to stay off of those at night. Okay. A little joke. All right. But we all have self-control issues, right? But those things are important. Okay. So I'm probably going to go to my, especially my teenager and say, you know, do you want me to nag you a lot? Because I'm really good at that. It's a strength area for me. or I hate it when you nag. Oh, that's what I thought you'd say. And so I'm just going to say it once. Deal? Okay. And if I say it twice, you can let me know and I'll work on that. All right. And so I like to say this, I allow the TV and devices to be available to kids in the family till such and such time. Let's say it's 9:00. Okay. End of story. Do I need to say anything more? Well, how come? Well, I bet you can figure that out at 15, right? I bet you can figure that one out. Yeah. And I don't get into a discussion with them. So if I'm a wise parent, I've thought ahead of time, okay, what do I do if we have a battle over it when 9 o'clock comes? Now, with some kids, it's just everything's off and, okay, I need your phone from you. It needs to be put on the counter and this and that. And with some kids, that works. With other kids, they're really going to push it to the limit. Okay, and they're going to refuse to give it to you. Mm-hmm. Or they're going to sneak it into their room, or they're going to get a burner phone, you know. And that's where we say to ourselves, if I try to fight the battle right when it's happening, it's going to be really sad. You know, we could even have a domestic violence incident here. We do not want that. And so there are times where, you know, especially with the bigger kids, is I'm taking my phone in my room and you can't stop me. You don't try to stop them because you know that the cost of that is going to be severe. Mm. So you watch it happen and you say to yourself, okay, I'm going to have to lose this little battle right now in order to win the war of love, you know, really mm-hmm. in the long term.
Yeah.
Okay. And so what does that look like though? Maybe the kid goes in their room and they have their phone and you're just, you know, there's nothing you can do about it. We're talking worst case scenario here.
Sure.
Well, that's when you start getting together with some of your friends or your spouse and talk about it and plan it all out. Good counselor maybe, but you know, I know that in a lot of homes, that's when the parents are saying, have to say things to the kids like, you know, well, the kid, they're going to put the phone down sooner or later, you know, and then it gets taken. I'm a big fan of taking kids' phones, by the way. Call me mean. So.
It's the biggest.
Take that phone. Yeah, but it's easier to take when they think we're not going for it.
Right.
Right. So it's like, no worries. And then as soon as it's on the counter, it's ours.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. You took my phone. And that's right. I love you too much to see you go off the deep end with this. Well, you can't do that. That's against the law. Could be. All right. Let's talk about dealing with arguing. You can't do that. I know. Yeah. And I love you too much to fight with me. You about that. Well, that's stupid. Well, I love you too much to argue with you. You just stick with the same thing. Well, you call yourself a Christian parent. You know, they'll throw that one at you. Oh, Han, I love you too much to argue. You just stick with the same thing over and over again. Don't try to make sense. But here's the basic idea. We set the limit once only over things that are big issues, right? We don't want to fight every battle. Okay. Then when it's time for us to enforce it, we enforce it with very few words. If the kid gets really defiant, sometimes we have to say to ourselves, I'm going to let this go until I have a plan. And when you have a plan, you implement. But we better not get too much farther down the road. We better not close this out before we say this. When we're having these problems with our kids, what's ultimately going to be the absolute pivot point, the absolute essential piece that has to happen is relationship. Mm. Coercion, threats, intimidation, those things have never changed a heart for good. What that kid is really saying to you is, when they're being that defiant, I need you in my life more, even more. I need to know how much you love me, that you love me enough to set limits and hold me accountable and to love me even though I smell bad and am not fun to be around. That's love.
That is so good. And I think that's what we all have to have as the goal, is that it's relationship. It's love. Mm-hmm. It's when our kiddo goes through puberty and emotions are all over the place and they are not fun to be around. But it's just going back to that to that relationship and how you can be a loving parent through the really hard, which I feel like you do such a great job and your team does such a great job of helping us do.
Well, thank you. And remember to love on yourself too. Because sometimes we're kind of difficult kids ourselves and we need to love on ourselves so that it's filled up enough to overflow on other people.
That's good. That'll preach.
Yeah.
That'll preach. Well, Dr. Fay, I could be on here forever and telling you all my parenting things you could help me with. You could make me the best parent.
I'd have to go first and I'm not there yet.
No,
so.
I love it. But I am so excited about your new book coming out, Raising Mentally Strong Kids, which you can get in March. And I'm excited just to go through it myself and let readers know about it. And I just thank you so much for being on and giving us your time and your heart and just the many years that you've devoted to helping families have loving relationships. So thank you so much for being on.
Well, thank you so much. Everybody, you take care. Very, very blessed to be with you today.